Now, for Women's History Month, we're talking with a politician who broke boundaries here in Wisconsin, the state's first woman to serve as Lieutenant Governor Margaret Farrow. Farrow served as Lieutenant Governor under then-Governor Scott McCallum from 2001 to 2003. That came after a long career in state and local politics. She joins us now to talk about her political career and her thoughts on the number of women in political office today. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you have questions for the former lieutenant governor about her career? And do you wonder why there aren't more women in politics, though we are seeing some record numbers in state and federal legislatures? That's 800-642-1234. As we mentioned, Margaret Farrow was Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin and served in the State Assembly and State Senate for 15 years. She was also chair of the State Women's Council. Margaret Farrow, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Good afternoon. Good to be with you.
Well, you've been on this network a lot over the years talking about politics. Let's talk about you a little bit. How did you first decide to make the entry into the political world?
Well, I'm glad you said political to an extent, except I would change that to government world. Mm. And sixth grade civics is where it all started for me. And I say that to the kids, especially when I talk to them and have throughout the years, because you have to be alert to what's going to turn you on and what's going to light your flame. And sixth grade civics made me aware of what government does and what I could do to be part of it. And it just went from there. And I got into local government because I found it so interesting. And I also knew I could handle it with raising five sons. And my husband was teaching at Milwaukee School of Engineering. And so it just worked out for us. And that's where I threw my hat in the ring first. And it grew from there.
What was it like running for office with all those kids? At a time when I think the expectation was that the woman of the family would be in charge of the kids.
Well, that's true, except I have great kids. and they were out stuffing mailboxes for me, knowing how to do it legally. And I lost my first two elections very closely, and I reminded them, so did Abraham Lincoln. And they learned a lot going through that with me. And then when I was elected on local level, we just went from there. And they were always part of it. My husband, from the day I first put my name on a ballot, on a candidate's ballot, he was totally in support of what I was doing. And he knew it was such a deep interest of mine. So we had a good working agreement.
I've heard from some researchers who look at women in politics, there's a tendency, not universal, but for men who decide to run for office, they think, I'd be really good in this post. And for women, it's often somebody else telling them you'd be really good in this post. It sounds like, though, you might be an exception to that. This sounds like it came more from within.
Yeah, I think it is. I think I was. But I had a lot of encouragement when my husband came home the day I decided to do it, and I told him what I decided to do that day, he looked at me and said, thank God, it's about time. I didn't think you were ever going to do it. And so he was right there with me right from the start.
I think a lot of people, men and women, anybody looks at people running for office, people working in government, and doesn't see their face in that role for one reason or another. Can you give, I don't know, a little of that sixth grade civics lesson to them that might make people who don't think about office, think about running for office, think about it?
Sure. I think what the important thing to do is to realize who is government. We are government, not somebody else. We are. It's our responsibility. And I think we've continued to see that. I think as a candidate, for example, I felt like I was sitting in the middle of a living room teaching because people didn't understand the sequencing of elections. They didn't understand when is it partisan, when isn't it partisan. They just have so much to learn. And I being a teacher by my original, let me turn that off.
Sure.
But when they, you know, when I would get going on it, I would realize, wait a minute, I'm teaching them things either they never heard or they forgot. And so there was an awful lot of teaching involved. And I think that's still the case.
Talking to Margaret Farrow, former Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, a first woman to serve in that post. Talking about her career and politics and women, whether they're represented in our politics today. And now let's look at your old stomping grounds, the state legislature. We have a record number of women here in Wisconsin in our state legislature, same in Congress, So that's if you're interested in women in Congress and legislatures, that's the good news. Bad news is still you're talking 1 in 3, 30-ish%, depending on which one you're looking at. What do you think of the numbers we see today?
Well, I think they're increasing. It seems to be the case, but I also think it's quality, not quantity. And I'm glad to know that the women I'm meeting who are running for office are certainly everybody you'd want them there. And they're not just doing it for some self-serving reason. And I'm very encouraged by that. I encourage them to do it. I make sure when I talk to candidates, they know what they're getting into. And it works.
In terms of numbers, we saw Democrats leading and still having more women serving in those legislatures. But these record numbers are driven, it looks like, by an increase in the number of Republican women now in this 2021 state legislature. Same with Congress, I believe. As a Republican yourself, do you find that encouraging?
I think it's good. I mean, the partisan side of me comes out where you sit in a large room, in this case, the Assembly, the Senate, wherever you are, and they're counting votes. So you naturally have to look at numbers. You don't get a bill passed unless you get enough votes on your side. I learned that very quickly. I learned how to work with other people, which is what I'm sadly feeling isn't as there as much as it used to be. I knew that if I was going to get a bill through, I had to get a strong partner on the other side of the aisle. Doris Hansen, who was a state representative when I was also in fact, I was upset when she retired because she was older than I was. And I kept thinking, darn, there she goes. But she and I did more bills together. And it was because we knew we had to be able to reach both caucuses. And that's what you learn you have to do, especially on the partisan side, where you have to count votes by what letter is behind your name so often.
Why do you, this is a big topic of conversation in Congress and here in Wisconsin, polarization. From where you're sitting, what happened? Why has it gotten harder, or at least it looks a lot harder, to get that kind of long-term partnership between the person with an R by their name and the person with a D by their name?
Well, I'm not quite sure if I'm going to come up with the most profound answer on that one, but I'll tell you, the important part of that is you have to develop the want to do within you, what we were talking about earlier. And I think you've just got to find the answers. And I really believe that I think it'll balance out. I really do.
One issue I wanted to ask you about, we see, unfortunately, in the news still in 2021, women facing various kinds of harassment when they go into politics and government, a bipartisan problem, apparently. I don't know. Has it gotten worse, or do we just know about it more, do you think?
I think it's the latter. First of all, there's more women doing it. You've already said that. I agree with that. It's true in business. There's more out in the world. And I think that we have to make sure that men realize there's a balance that is needed here. And I think it's going to work out. I'm very positive about that.
So if you, and I assume you talk to sixth graders from time to time yourself still, when you talk to, you know, that girl in sixth grade, what do you say, hoping to encourage them to follow a career in public service?
Well, I often look right in their eyes at the end of any presentation I make and look at all the girls in this case, if I'm speaking specifically on this issue rather than government in general, and I'll say, you can do what I'm doing here. You've got to find the answers to what government's about. You've got to find why people run, what they do when they win and get in office, and realize that's your responsibility. I once said to a group up in Stevens Point, in a breakfast get-together with, I don't know if it was a key club or what it was, and I said, you know what? The future of our state depends on you. What are you going to do about it? And I mean that. And this kid came up to me afterwards. It looked like he fell out of bed in his dorm room. And I wish I knew where he was now, because he had his eyes so wide. And he said, Senator, I don't know what I was at the time, Senator, Lieutenant Governor. And he said, that was cool. Nobody ever told me that I was the future of the state and I could make things happen. He said, I've got to start really studying. And I thought, oh, my God, I hope I turned a light on for him. And I think that's with parents, and that's what I think, in a way, our internet is doing some of that, because so much more is available now. But, I'm still concerned. We've got to keep feeding the other side of the growth the growth area.
And I wanted to ask, you mentioned you lost your first couple races for office. What do you say to that person who did get that vision, they ran, and they lost?
Well, I just tell them, look at Abraham Lincoln. He lost his first two elections, and he lost more things that he tried to get in leadership in the legislature, both in Springfield, Illinois, and in Washington when he got out there. I mean, you have to have the desire, and you have to know why you're doing it, and then stay committed, especially with that army of committed people right behind you. I mean, when you've got six men, as I had in my family, and they are all bright, intelligent, challenging me to the hilt, I couldn't disappoint them. I couldn't disappoint myself in the desire I had. So you just keep working at it.
Margaret, thanks a lot for taking the time today. I appreciate it.
Well, it's good speaking with you, Rob. Very, very nice. Thank you.
That was Margaret Farrell, longtime member of Wisconsin State Legislature and the first woman to serve as Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin. Coming up, we'll talk more about women in politics, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are we talking about you? If you're a woman, have you run for office? Have you considered it and rejected the idea? If so, why? What would it have taken to put you into throwing your hat into the ring? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about women's representation in politics. This year, women broke records at the federal and state levels. There are now more women serving in Congress and in the Wisconsin State Legislature than ever before. But women in legislatures are still far outnumbered by men, who make up about 70% of Congress and the state legislature. Look at why that is and what happens when there are more women in government. Alisa von Hagel is an associate professor of political science at UW-Superior. Her research focuses on biomedical policy, reproductive rights, the pro-life movement, and the religious right. And she teaches a class on women in politics. You could join in at 800-642-1234, maybe with your own experience running for office. Alisa, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me for this conversation.
Well, we just heard from former Lieutenant Governor Margaret Farrow there, and we have this record-breaking year for women in legislatures. What do you think is driving that trend now?
Well, one thing that she mentioned that I want to sort of build on is this idea of encouragement, and I think that she is spot on that for, you know, whether it's women, people of color, people of, you know, different ethnic backgrounds or, you know, religious backgrounds, that people we don't typically see in public office, encouragement by party leaders, by family, by colleagues, by whomever, can really serve as a really powerful motivator. And I think, but what's interesting about what we saw with the huge increase in women's representation of this past election cycle was that so many women were, I guess, no longer waiting for that push, that encouragement, that ask, you know, being asked to run for office. And so whether or not that represents a large scale change is obviously yet to be seen. But, you know, as of, you know, based upon the research anyway, that notion or idea of encouragement, it really is central.
Is there a self-sustaining cycle? Maybe if young women grow up seeing women serving these posts, they're more likely to consider it as an option for themselves?
Absolutely. I mean, the notion that a person, an individual, sees themselves as empowered to act politically, whether it's, you know, to vote, to donate, to volunteer, or to run for office, is not solely dependent upon seeing, you know, someone who looks like you in office, but seeing those individuals who look like you that is different than, you know, all the others, you know, that really can serve as an extraordinary motivator or serve as a role model of sorts to allow individuals, whether it's women, younger women or girls, to see themselves as politically efficacious, that they have the right and to be there and to run for office.
If there are more women in office, does it lead to any different policies?
There's been a lot of research on this. We see that there are a lot of the research tends to focus on, you know, issues such as child care or family leave policy. And we see that with the increase of women in office in different like local, regional, even state level bodies of government, that there is a measurable, you know, expansion or increase in the of childcare access. And so we see that, you know, that's obviously an issue that still to this day is still predominantly addressed or dealt with by women. And so it's an issue that women are perhaps more likely to be cognizant of or thinking about with respect to, you know, their doing their job in office. We also see that it's women that really changed, helped to transform our the way in which help to put pressure on the organizations that govern medical research. And we saw that, or really up until the 1990s, sort of the, you know, most medical research, biomedical research was conducted on virtually only white men, whether it's, you know, a new form of aspirin or if it was breast cancer research. All of that was conducted primarily on men's bodies. And so it was women that really brought, you know, attention to the issue and also used a different type of awareness raising and involving of the public that allowed members of Congress to see what, you know, that this was an issue and to address it. So there's so many different ways in which women have these sort of small or even really large scale effects on public policy.
Talking to Lisa von Hagel from UW-Superior, political scientist there, looking at women in politics, growing numbers of women in legislatures in states, including Wisconsin, and in Congress. Alisa, there's a gender gap I see every presidential election. Women lean Democratic in the final vote, usually less so than Republican, vice versa, often for men. Do you see that that kind of gender gap playing out in who's running for office as Democrats versus Republicans?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We see that, I mean, the presence of Democratic women in office hugely outpaces those of, you know, their Republican counterparts. And there's also, again, been so much written on this and so many different ways to look at the issue. But absolutely, we see that there is, you know, despite notable gains at different, you know, here and there, different points in time, we see that, so women in the Republican Party are quite minimal as compared to their Democratic counterparts. And I would say probably more so than the public in general with respect to. Their presence in Congress is even more so diminished than their presence in the general public in terms of ideology.
Now, we have the actual population is roughly 50-50, I think actually a little more, 51-49 or something like that, more women than men. Is there going to be a day, do you think, when we are at a 50-50-ish split in terms of representation in Congress and legislatures?
Well, according to all my students in class, it's eventually, we'll get there. They're all firm believers that over time it'll happen. And I guess, I don't know, I'm kind of still a little agnostic on the question, but I guess based upon, I know some people have kind of looked at the trends from 1917 to today and have played out or, you know, when we would achieve parity, at least at the federal level in the U.S. Congress. And so many people look to 2108 as this magical date in which it will happen. And again, there's so many different, you know, forces and factors that could shape this. And again, how COVID plays into that, you know, how this affects women's representation in years to come is obviously yet to be seen. But it certainly won't be anytime soon, no doubt. So unfortunately, we will still just hopefully see these gradual increases over time.
And briefly, as we wrap up, Alisa, do you see some of the things that might have been barriers for women going away at all between now and, I don't know, 2108?
In terms of women running for office, I think there are some barriers that are being addressed with respect to presenting themselves as mothers or as women. In the past, it was discouraged as such, and and there are differences in the way that the media treats men and women candidates, which is slowly starting to change, and hopefully that continues. But again, we see certain candidates in certain elections or certain races that these stereotypes, these negative stereotypes, really become heightened and can negatively affect not only the candidates themselves, but also potential women who want to run for office and see the way that the media is treating certain individuals because of their gender or their sexuality or whatever. And that no doubt could potentially diminish the number of women who are willing to run for office. So there's positive changes, but yet it's, you know, there's still work. There's definitely still work that needs to be done.
Alisa, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Alisa von Hagel, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Superior. She joined us for a look at women in the world of politics and government.